Okay, here's the bit at the beginning, yada yada yada. You know, little funny bit at the start of the episode that ends with...
Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast.
Boys, I had a really nice experience on Saturday.
Did you, John?
I did. I did some writing. I did quite a lot of writing. Genuinely did quite a lot of writing. Katie was away and one of my sons is on a school trip and the other one's got he's revising quite a lot. But I actually spent pretty much the whole day writing and it made me think, you see, this is like a vindication that I'm not just lazy or procrastinatey. I am just busy.
Not just that. No.
And that as well. Yes, but not just that.
What did you do then, John?
I was working on my book.
What were you beavering away at?
Yeah, I was working on my book. I was writing. Wow. I was writing a couple of scenes that I'd forgotten that I had just written. He runs away, or he does this. When I went back and was having a good look through it, but also doing a bit of editing and just sort of moving things around and. Yeah, but it did. It made me think. It was sort of gave me a little window into a life where I could almost imagine myself as a writer.
Almost. Do you know, I did some productive writery stuff as well.
Whilst we're
blowing our own trumpets.
Yes. Spooky War Book?
Yeah, well, did I mention to you that I was going to do one of these, go and sit in a room with a load of other people and try and write stuff?
Oh, so you did that?
I did. So I booked it in advance. I think it was called Shut Up and Write. At the Watershed in Bristol.
Brilliant.
And I booked it all and I looked at the list of other people who were going to be there and I sort of found where it was supposed to be. And I went along. And I went up to the bar and I said, "Oh, I'm here for the shut up and write type thing," and they went, "The what?" I said, "For the writers group meeting." There's no one here for that. They usually sat over there, but there's no one here. So I don't know what the hell happened.
They knew you were coming, Dave.
Yeah. One other person turned up. I saw one other chap walking around like he'd lost something.
Did you say hi to him? Are you a writer?
I said, "Hello, are you here to write something?" And it turned, so there's just me and him. Me and him sat in a room, and bless him, he still bothered to get his phone out and time what we were doing, so we had the appropriate length of time. Bless him.
So how long?
It was like 45 minutes, and then a little break, and then another 45 minutes.
And did you chat with anyone else? Did you chat with any of your fellow writers on the break and have a...
No, just had a chat with some drunk out the front. 1,800 words.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
So it's working.
I got something done, yeah. Well, there was literally nothing else to do. There's a lot to be said for that. There was no interruptions.
I think that's really true.
Didn't bother connecting to the Wi-Fi, so there was no emails or anything like that. Sat down and wrote. It's great.
I do find I do write really well in cafes and things.
Yeah, well, I've
got nowhere to go.
Yeah, I've always worried about whether it would just just look really pretentious, but... No, just got on with it.
Very good. Well, for a change, things are going in the right direction.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I did loads of writing at the weekend.
Oh, my God.
Virtually, what have you been writing? All Sunday. I pretty much got through the entire first edit of my kids' book.
What?
Wow.
Is this true? This is mental. What's happened to us?
And, you know, I said to send off five submission pieces as part of my...
writing plans. Year's goals. Yeah.
First one of them went.
What?
Got sent off.
What? So, it's finally working. It's finally all coming together.
This is incredible. That's a bit
scary, isn't it? With all three of us. Has that happened before? That's not happened
I don't
before.
Think it has.
With all three.
There's
always been one going. Well, good for you guys.
I think the stars might finally be aligning. I think that's what it is. We've put the work in. We've done our shifts, we're reaping the rewards. And
it's all coming together.
Yeah. Long may it continue.
Well, that's It's not always the case with us. Sometimes things don't always go as planned.
No,
do they?
We've had a bit of a chat about this because we've done an interview. We mentioned it at the end of the last episode. We were excited about doing it with Flora Opel. And, well, it didn't go exactly as planned. And
it wasn't perfect, was it?
It wasn't perfect.
But
no, and I don't think it should be on the podcast. I don't think we should be putting it out.
No, come on. We've talked about this before.
What else are we going to do now?
I know, but...
Yeah. I don't have any other time free.
No. I get you said anything else. I think it was you that said it is what happened. It's a fair reflection of what happened and is what it is. I get that.
Yeah. We owe a level of sort of, you know, authenticity.
I think for the sake of truth and candor, we just play the interview in its entirety. Let the fallout happen. It's like any of these things. Looking back, you think, yes, I probably could have handled that better. Like, I think probably all of us.
I don't think it was.
There were elements, maybe. But anyway, it's quite an interview, and it's very different to the chats we've had with other authors in the past. So I'd say we play it.
If we're going to play it, just play it. We don't need to.
Just do it.
So here it is, a chat with someone who used to be my favourite author. Let's just put it that way. Well, this week we are beside ourselves, I think it's fair to say, with excitement to be joined by one of my favourite contemporary writers. She has written over 10 best-selling books, including the massive literary success from back in 1978, The Man Who Lost His Foot, when she was only 20 years old, and she's had a fascinating, if somewhat dramatic, life, which we might get into later. It is the one and only Flora Opal. Flora, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Very thrilled to have you on.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here.
That's very nice of you. I first came across your writing via my local bookshop at the time, the Oxfam secondhand bookshop in Headingley, where I bought Swollen Gantry, and I really enjoyed it. It was very experimental, and I was quite into that kind of stuff at the time.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, what was it that inspired that story? Because it was quite, I want to say it was quite out there, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yes, it was. I think what inspired it was, I don't want to use the word breakdown, but that's probably what they'd call it now. You know, at the time, I just thought it was a bit tired.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you'd call it something.
Yes, probably.
I don't know.
A full breakdown.
Well, not a full one. I mean, I carried on. You know, you do, don't you?
Of course you did.
You finished the book, John.
Well,
yes. You finished the book.
Exactly.
Were you locked up?
No.
You weren't locked up or anything. You finished the book.
Yes. Would that all breakdowns were so creative and fruitful.
Yes. It doesn't always end that way, does it?
No.
I mean, it does, yeah. I mean, that makes more sense in that context. Mm,
I mean, it was after my third divorce.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think probably, you know, things had just got a bit on top of me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not surprised. And do you think that was a huge part of it must have been a huge part of the influence for that book?
The divorce.
The divorces and the breakdown?
Yes.
Yeah, was it all...
I don't want to give him any credit for it, you know.
No.
All the credit's mine for putting up with him for so long, probably.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but also alimony becomes tricky if you give someone credit. So I would say it definitely was... My state of mind was an influence, and also my feelings of freedom.
Yeah.
And I think the feeling of freedom led to the freedom of the prose.
Yes.
Yeah, because the structure of that book was very interesting. It doesn't have a linear narrative, does it?
No. I was trying something new. I think it worked incredibly well, and I stand by it. A lot of people disagreed, but I'd say they were wrong. And I thought, linear's been done, hasn't it? A lot.
It's been done a lot.
Let's try something, you know.
Well, a story should have a start, a middle and an end.
Or should it?
People should think about which order those need to go in, shouldn't they, Flora?
Well, quite. Or even if they're needed at all.
Right.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I think we only think that because life has a start, a middle and an end.
Yes, that's probably true, isn't it? And we relate story to life.
Exactly, and I think that's small-minded.
Mm. Yeah, why does there have to be an end? Why does there have to be a start?
Right. Just begin when you begin, but that's not the beginning, and end when it ends.
Yeah.
But it hasn't ended, yeah.
No, I mean, you know, has it ended?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Hmm.
Was there an end in the book that you read, John, or did it just...
There's no full stop.
No, it sort of ended in the kind of in the middle of a sentence.
Yes.
But
yes.
I suppose that was That was part and parcel of what, in a way, it sort of led back round to the beginning of the book. But I suppose the beginning wasn't really the beginning, in a way.
No, yeah. And, you know, it ended in the middle of a sentence because I did lose the last page of the manuscript.
Oh, right. And, that was the original.
Yeah, and I thought, well, let's just stick with that then.
Yeah.
But no one noticed until it had been printed. That was
different
the...
times.
Well, I suppose it leaves everything open to interpretation, doesn't it? When you don't know when one sentence has ended and the next one's began. You can read it.
Yeah.
You can read it however you want. You can make your own story from the story.
Yes, except there is a story.
Oh, yeah. Very much a story,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So that was a big departure from your debut novel, which was a massive hit.
It was.
But The Man Who Lost His Foot was very much, I was going to say a bog standard. That sounds terrible. But kind of a...
Yes.
No, don't put it that way, Tom.
A traditional novel. Yes. A traditional story.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
And award-winning and massively well-received. Mm. And you were only, what were you, 19, 20 when you wrote that?
20, yes. I was very young. You know, obviously, sort of like a modern-day Mozart, I would call myself. Yeah. So I was very, I can't think of the word. I'm thinking of the word prolific, but that's not the word I mean. Promiscuous, no.
It starts with P.
Probably.
Probably.
You know when... Sorry?
No, I was just making a joke that it might have been probably, because that starts with a P, sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I was probably... No, I was thinking of the word, you know when someone's a child... Prodigy. Mm. I was a prodigy.
Yes.
There we go. It did begin with P.
There we go.
So I was a prodigy.
Yeah.
You know, I was quite young, and I was very influenced by what I'd read. Mm. And what I'd read had been mostly, you know, more traditional.
Mm. Sort of highbrow literature.
Mm. Yes, I love
things used to be more traditional in the old days, didn't they?
They did in the good old days. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
And can I ask, because one thing about that book that really kind of made it work was the twist at the end.
Mm.
I don't think there's any chance of spoilers 40 years on. Tell us about how you came up with that twist.
It was mostly to do with I'd come up with the title, then I wrote it, and then I thought, wouldn't it be funny if he hadn't lost his foot? So, you know, it was really just a kind of,
basic.
This'll show them.
Yeah, you know? No one saw that coming.
And no one was expecting him to have always had a foot.
No.
Right, yeah, that's true. Which is weird, isn't it? Because you'd think that people wouldn't expect him to not have a foot.
A lot of people have feet.
It's kind of like a Deus ex machina ending, but the Deus was a foot.
A foot. Yes.
A foot that was there all along.
Deus ex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know.
Exactly.
Because it did very well.
It did. I was going to say it did really well, but it did say on your Wikipedia page, and it didn't go into it much, but one of the, I don't know which award it was, you won for it. There was, what happened at the ceremony? Something controversial or...
Was this the Horlicks... Horlicks Young Writers Prize.
Right, yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yes, well, that you did have to drink a lot of Horlicks. And I don't know if you've ever OD'd on Horlicks,
right.
But it does rather make you rather sleepy.
I guess that's what it's designed to do, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So I was asleep when they announced the winner. Fast asleep. And everyone said, oh dear. She's probably drunk. I wasn't. I was drunk on Horlicks.
Off you what's it's on Horlicks.
Yes, because it is very heavily fortified.
It is, isn't it?
It's a lot to...
Isn't it? Yeah. No one drinks it anymore.
No.
Yes, and I always think, why don't people drink that anymore? They're all after hot chocolate these days, you know, and it's all fancy hot chocolate, isn't it? None of that powdered stuff that we used to drink. But I like the powdered stuff, and I like Horlicks.
Yeah.
You know, I say... Bring back the old...
You know what it is, I reckon. Everyone's gluten-free these days.
Well, yes.
So that might be the problem.
Is there gluten in Horlicks?
Probably.
Quite
it's
a lot.
Malty, isn't
probably.
It?
Yeah,
it's entirely gluten. Yeah, it's just...
Is malt gluten?
I think malt has gluten. I don't think malt is gluten. Malt has gluten.
Yeah.
It was much easier when we didn't have to think about what things were and you could just enjoy them.
The allergic people would just fall by the wayside and we could all just carry on with our life.
Yes, natural selection.
Exactly.
Because that was 1979, I think, when you won the Horlicks Young Writers Award, which was actually the year I was born, as it happens.
Is it?
It is, yeah. No. Is it, Is it difficult, do you think, when someone has so much success so young, like, to keep that going into your sort of advancing years?
I've never found it difficult, I wouldn't say. I found it... there was certainly, you know, there's been a large gap recently.
Yeah.
Partly, I think, because when you... You know, if you start at 50 or 60, you've probably only got to fill 20 years or so with writing. But if you start at, you know, 20, you've got to fill a lot of years. You know, you could be up to 70 years of writing, and that's a lot of words. And I do think, you know, because there aren't, here's the thing, there are very few new words.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
So I've used all the words that I know.
Yeah, I suppose you saved a few by finishing one of your books halfway through a sentence.
That's true.
That was some in the back pocket for later for another book. Yes.
If only I could find that last page. But, you know, it was pre-computers, so it was all handwritten.
How did you start writing as a child? What was it? Was it a school thing or?
Well, I mean, I suppose you just sort of had to, didn't you? It was mostly copying to start with, I think, and then... And then you had to write, you know, my holiday, you know. So I wrote about Dungeness quite a lot. That's where we used to go on holiday.
Right.
Wrote a lot about Dungeness. And I think that bleakness of Dungeness has really, you know...
kind of served you well in
later. Absolutely.
I suppose rather than talking about the past, we should jump to the present day.
Oh, so I wish you would.
You've had, I don't know, what, 15, 20-year gap since your last
20 years, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And that last book wasn't massively successful, was it, or well-received? You kind of...
I mean, you know, it depends, I suppose, on your definition of success.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Selling copies, I suppose, would be one... measure of success.
But you kind of took your bat and ball home a little bit after that, didn't you? Criticising the industry as a whole.
Well, I think the industry has become too obsessed with, you know, shiny new things. And I'm sorry, I'm very distracted. I don't know if you can hear that, but my cat's eating a cardboard box.
Mm.
So I'm sorry if that affects your recording, but that's what that is. It's not a rat.
That's as long as it doesn't affect his
digestion. We've had much stranger background noises.
So
after you'd kind of cocked a snook at the publishing industry, made you come back 20 years later? What was the reason?
Here's the thing. You know, with all this diversity and, you know, people, you know, new voices. Well, here's the thing. Where are the middle-aged, middle-class female voices? That's what I say, the forgotten generation, you know, because the men are fine, you know, they say there's too many, you know, straight white men, but they're still all right, Jack. And then, you know, you've got all the diversity, but where's the middle-aged, middle-class? I mean, all right, middle-aged is pushing it, but where's the, you know, that voice? And I don't think there's enough of it. And I thought, you know what's missing in the discourse? Is me.
Yes, your own voice.
My voice.
You're missing your own voice.
Yes, I was missing it very much because, you know, since my sixth divorce, I've been alone with just the cat.
Yeah.
One cat now. I did have six. I had one for each ex-husband. And they've slowly all died, except for the last one who's
the
eating
cats,
cardboard.
Not the husbands.
Oh, yes. No, unfortunately, only half of the husbands have died.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's terrible.
Well, no, I mean, they were all
You'd only
awful.
Need to get a bigger patio, wouldn't you? Your current book, how's that going as a almost like becoming a first-time author again?
Well, yes. It's called Greasing the Tabernacle. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to tell you. My publisher will probably be cross, but you know what? I don't care.
No, that information is available online.
Oh, it is. So. I don't really go online, I have to say. So it's a departure for me because I'm not writing longhand these days.
Oh, okay.
I'm writing on a computer, which I find very. But what I have to do when I edit is print everything out.
Yeah.
And edit it on the page.
Mm.
Right. And then type it up again. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So that's different. And I have gone back to a more linear structure. You'll be sorry to hear if you enjoyed the ones that didn't. But I thought, you know, well, people don't have a very big attention span these days with all the TikToks.
Yeah, it's like seconds these days, isn't it? You've
got to
grab people in those first two or three words.
Yes.
So should we expect something quite grabbing from the first page? Is that,
I mean, I would have thought so. It is me. You know, yes. Yes, that's my aim, is to grab.
Excellent.
Not, you know, but to grab with enthusiastic consent.
Of course.
I believe that.
Yes. Of course.
Yes. Are you hoping to get, like, a new audience, do you think, for this new book? Or are you just hoping to sort of reignite the old audience?
Well, a lot of the old audience are probably dead. So I would like a new audience. My worry is that, you know, I'm not. I'll get into trouble, won't I? I'm not woke enough.
Okay,
right.
For the new generation, you know.
Well, I was gonna dare to ask that if it's because there has been, if you look on Twitter and what have you, with the new book Greasing the Tabernacle, some people have said it's that there's basically that there's it's. Racist, in some way.
Well, I wouldn't.
I don't know
how. I mean, if anyone could explain to me exactly how, then I'd you know consider it. But I don't, you know. No. I refute that completely.
So did it go through any like sensitivity readers and stuff with the publishers or?
They wanted to, and I said no.
Right.
Right. And then I believe they said they would do it anyway, and I said, well, you know, good luck with that. And and then I've just ignored all the emails since then.
I mean, it's difficult not to offend somebody, isn't it? I mean, I haven't read it personally. But...
I'm not offending. You're offended.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the isn't it? There's a couple of these comics who say things like that.
Yeah.
I can't offend you. You can just be offended. I mean, that doesn't really... That's a slight misunderstanding of the English language, but it works to my advantage, so I'll accept
right.
it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I think, like, probably like most of our listeners, I would guess to say, I personally haven't read any of your books. So do you think you could...
Well, you've had a long time to.
I'm not much of a reader, to be honest.
Why you're a failing writer.
That could be something to do with it. Yeah, if I read a bit more,
I
might be able to write. But I wondered if you could, for myself and the millions of others who haven't read your books, if you could sum up your writing style in a word or a sentence.
Quixotic and unmissable. And I suggest you do your research when you interview an author, you know, read the books.
Yes.
And you can get them all on on the books on tape.
Yes.
Now?
You can.
Yes.
You can get the CDs.
Yeah.
I read somewhere, Flora, that you refuse to allow your books to be translated into other languages. Is that...
Absolutely, absolutely.
Why is that? That seems like...
Is that any language or like...
It's written in English. I spent a long time choosing the exact words, and I don't know any other languages, so I wouldn't be able to tell if they'd use the exact words that corresponded to the exact words that I use. And to be honest, everyone should just learn to read English.
Right.
You know? It's the universal language.
Right,
And it should remain so. It's very useful.
Yeah.
You know, if everyone knows English, then there's no problem with communication, is there?
No, it would be a lot easier, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Wouldn't it? Yeah. And again, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying
and
that.
And it's a very beautiful language as well, isn't it, English?
It is. Yeah. Yes. Oh,
in
very.
In the right hands.
Well, yeah,
obviously,
I mean,
in the right hands.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And my hands are the right hands for English.
Beautiful hands. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So how are the sales progressing for the new book.
Because it's literally only, I think it's only just
a couple of weeks out, isn't it?
Yeah. Launched, isn't it?
Well, I don't read reviews. Haven't read a review since. Obviously, the last book was rather panned, and I wrongly misunderstood. You know, and that was when I realised that reviewers don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
And so I don't read any of those reviews. And as I said, I don't read emails from my publisher if I can help it. So I don't know that that's true, you know, that the sales haven't been good. I rather think they will. And of course, if you do your jobs with a podcast like this properly, you know, and advertise properly and get lots of listeners, then they'll all want to read it. You know, that's why I'm doing these ghastly interviews.
Have you had to do a lot of sort of publicity, you know, like touring, bookshops, signings, that sort of thing?
Oh, I don't. Well, I wouldn't tour now or sign. I mean, signing. Who wants a signed
book? I mean, they're quite popular, aren't they?
Yeah,
a lot of
they are still popular.
Yeah, but now you have to sign thousands of them, and then it's more fun if it's just a one-off. You know, then it's worth something. But now everything's got to scribble.
Just sign one book. Just sign
one book.
And hide it somewhere.
Yes, maybe I'll do that. Everyone has to go and buy a copy of the book, and I'll sign one book, but it won't be on the front page. It'll be somewhere in the book.
That's clever.
I'll hide it somewhere in the country, and then everyone will have to buy my book.
You have to read it to find out if it's that one, like a golden ticket.
Exactly like that, like Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're onto something.
That's a good way to encourage people to read, isn't it?
Yeah.
Give the opportunity. Yes. If you don't like the book, at least there's a chance that it might be worth something.
But they will like the book, won't they?
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
of course they will. Yeah.
You know. Of course they will.
Me.
Yes.
Do you get a lot of guests on this?
We do, yeah.
We've had some.
Yeah, we've had quite a lot.
We've had quite a few.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
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 I've never listened, I must admit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I suppose we wouldn't necessarily expect you.
Yeah, you're not necessarily in our demographic of listener, really.
What's your demographic? Well, woke young people.
There's probably a few of those, to be fair.
Our audience are probably a bit more sort of, I guess, in touch with, you know, the sort of latest trends and with, you know, sort of technology and the...
I'm not in touch.
Well, no, I'm not saying that you're not in touch. I'm just saying perhaps our audience are a bit more in touch.
You did say before, didn't you, that you don't go online a lot.
Yeah.
So that's because, you know, you go online and it's just people complaining about
your racist
things
books.
And saying, you know, well, that, you know, which is ridiculous. And then, you know, I saw something the other day and a lot of conspiracy theories.
Yeah, going back to the writing, though.
Yes.
Were there any, have you... In your long career, have you mixed with a lot of other writers? Is there any that you've taken influence from? Are you, you know, as kind of part of
because you must have been to some good parties, some good literary parties.
Yes, some very good parties. None that I can tell you.
That good.
Have you got any gossip you can tell us from 1983?
Well, not really. You know, certainly a couple of parties expedited divorces. you know. On my part.
Pick a husband up at a party, divorce him on the next one.
Yes, or pick up someone else's husband. You know, I picked up a lot of husbands at parties, but they weren't mine often. And, you know, I did have a good time, but it got to the point where, you know, you'd say, who have you been inspired by? Or, you know, and you'd say someone was an inspiration and then there'd be accusations of plagiarism and what have you. And I thought it was just misogyny. I mean, you know.
Yeah. There was, you did have a bit of a storm about plagiarism, didn't you? With one of your books.
Yes.
Wasn't that Rant?
Yes, Rant.
That your sort of polemical novel.
Yes, and a lot of people said it bore quite a lot of resemblance to one of the Amoses. I forget which. And and I said, well, that's just because they rant and they're angry. But, you know.
And did that go legal? Did that like go
to the
courts?
Yes, it did go legal, yes. Yes, it did rather go legal. And that, yes. Yes, it did, rather.
Did it go legally in your favour?
Well, I mean, in my favour, in that... Sorry, just having a drink. In my favour, morally, if not legally.
So you lost? Did you lose the? You lost the case.
Yes, yes. It's why I lost my last publisher, and also why the hiatus began.
Oh, that was down to that court case.
Yes,
I didn't realise.
No, I mean it was big at the time, but you know, yesterday's news is today's. Well, it's not.
No,
they can't do that
with these woke fish and chip shops.
Absolute madness,
isn't it?
So you didn't take a break from writing because you just fancied a break. It was more what you could call a sort of enforced absence.
Yeah, ostracised, I guess, from the writing community.
You could say that, or you could say that I was doing research for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I was researching wine. Mostly.
Okay.
Does wine feature quite a lot in the latest book?
Oh, yes.
Right.
You know, greasing the tabernacle is also, you know, a sort of metaphor for greasing the wheels of creativity. You know, the nectar of the gods.
And that, because I know that during, there was a period, wasn't there? I think, were you divorcing the writer Ted Rollins during the whole sort of rant period? Because there's a character, isn't there? There's a character in that book called Todd.
Todd Rollins. Yes.
Yeah, is that sort of loosely based on someone?
Well, I mean, you know, you might say so. I wouldn't. There was also a secondary...
Doesn't want another legal case,
yes,
John.
Yeah, there was a secondary...
No. Is he one of the dead ones?
No. That was a legal case at the time. And, you know, I did win that one morally and legally. Because, you know, it says any persons living or dead, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he was, you know,
he was living or
sadly
dead,
living.
So it can't be him, can it?
He was the living dead. you know.
Maybe that could be your next book. Have you got another book in you? Maybe do a zombie one?
Yes. Well, I mean, why not? It worked for, you know, the Jane Austen thing, didn't it?
Mm.
Just put some zombies in, and now they're all winning awards, all the zombies, aren't they?
Yeah.
What are your plans then for the future? Like, assuming that this book will be the sort of success that you hope it will be.
I know it's going to be a success.
We hope it will be.
At the minute, it's maybe not looking that way, is it, from what you said from
That's right. Well, I mean, that's what you said. I haven't said that at all. I mean,
you've just not looked. Yeah.
I mean, I've said it's going to be a great success, and I stand by that.
Right.
So
no, I just
you know,
sorry. Yeah. No, from maybe just taking a little time to take off because of its racist content. Yeah. Maybe.
It's not racist. It's just not popular, or not popular in certain circles.
With
but that doesn't
ethnic
make it
communities
racist.
Or yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, I don't know because I don't
care
speak to any.
Right.
But if, you know, things do pick up and it becomes a success, do you think
Can we use the word when?
Sorry, when. Yeah, absolutely. When it takes off, when it finally takes off and you start to sell some copies and perhaps the sort of publisher asks you for another book, that would be the sort of, you know, what do you have something prepared, have something ready from those 20 odd years of research?
Well, a lot of it I've forgotten, you know,
right, the wine, presumably.
Yes, I mean, you know, but in vino veritas, and there's definitely some little nuggets in there.
Yep.
And I'd say, you know, there's that thing, isn't there, everyone's got a novel in them, and I say yes, but not everyone should write it. And but I think I've got more than my fair share of novels, you know, and I've only written really about two or three of my marriages, and there's a lot more to come out of that. There's also a lot more to come out of the literary world, you know. Maybe that's what I should do.
Yeah.
Maybe I should write, instead of a thinly veiled memoir, maybe I should write an actual memoir and bring them all down, you know.
tell it as it,
well, that would
as
be
it is.
Yes, I know some things.
Ooh, like what, Flora? Come on, give us some juicy bits. Give us an exclusive.
Well, now, were those, you know, were her stories autobiographies or fictions? Which makes you think, doesn't it? How many bodies are there in the cellar?
Yeah.
Really? Seems unlikely to me.
I think she would probably get caught if there was that many.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying she did all of them. but you know.
Just selected.
Right.
A select few.
Just when she was struggling for an idea.
If you read through her back catalogue and you go, hang on a minute, that one's got a ring of truth about it. There's about five that are, I would say, factual.
I don't mean to laugh, but it just seems a bit silly.
I'm not silly.
I'm not saying you're silly.
Misogyny here, you know. Oh, well, here's a woman telling me a thing. Must be just silly. Silly
so.
Woman.
No, I don't think you need to have a chip
on your shoulder about.
Oh, I haven't got a chip on my shoulder. No, I haven't got a chip on my shoulder. I just don't like being called silly when I'm. You know, you asked.
No, the idea was silly. That's all.
It's just the ideas you
I think
have.
We probably
that
need
silly,
to say that legally. We don't want to get into more battles.
You were the ones pushing for it. Oh, come on, Flora, give us a tidbit. I give you one.
I thought you'd say something like someone fell over at an awards ceremony or.
Well, why would I tell you that?
Terribly
boring story that would be. Here's another reason why you're failing writers. Because if that's what you think
we're trying to help with the book, essentially. We're just trying to tease little bits that we think might be more interesting to the audience you're searching
for. Sorry, more interesting. My books aren't interesting enough in and of them. This is why I hate doing these things.
No, it's not interesting in and of itself. It's just, you know, sometimes you just need, something to really grab people's attention, you know?
But why are we all so obsessed with the person behind the words? Why do the words speak for themselves? It's celebrity culture gone mad, isn't it? I suppose you're writing a book about Love Island or something, aren't you? Or Love is Blind Love, or, you know, Married Love, right, or whatever, one of those. That's what you're writing about.
It sounds like you're getting a little bit... a bit upset, Flora. We don't want to, you know. Yes.
Oh, a woman states an opinion and she's getting upset.
I think Dave was just trying to move on from that rather than poke it with a stick.
Yes, Do you have time for just one little nugget just to really sell the book? Because I don't think we've quite done that yet. Is there something that, you know, you want to help to?
I gave you a nugget about and you ridiculed me. What do you want me to tell you about you don't think she writes those ghost stories without some kind of, you know,
a ghost?
Well, yeah, maybe. Right.
I feel like this conversation has gone a little bit south.
Well, I think it's run its course, to be honest. Because if this is how you interview people, you must have a lot to choose from.
Well, we just find that, most people are a bit more, you know, accommodating and,
It's my fault. It's my fault. Yes.
Well, listen, Flora, maybe we should end there and just say, look, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It's been really interesting talking to you. And I'm very much looking forward to reading your next book.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it's been awful.
Okay. Right.
Well, wasn't she... I don't know what we do here.
Interesting.
Interesting?
Interesting. She is a phenomenal writer.
Do we need to lawyer up?
She's a hacky has-been that we should have had on the podcast.
Tom,
mate.
I don't think she's really likely to sue or anything, though, is she? I don't think...
Nah. She'd be too drunk. She won't even know what's going on. She's just...
I don't think she's ever going to listen to this, to be fair. Yeah, so I think we can say whatever we want.
Maybe we should just put a pin in it and just move on to something else that's hopefully a bit fresher, a bit newer, and is going to cheer us up a little bit. So
we're moving straight on. We're literally moving straight on.
I think
that's the best
we can do is no comment, isn't it? Rather than...
It's probably the safest thing to do under the circumstances.
It went wrong, oh so wrong, felt so strong that it went wrong, smelled a pong of pure wrong, fell headlong onto a prong, wrote a song about how it went wrong. So Pete Tong, did I mention it went wrong? This song feels like it's already gone on too long, which means this song has also gone wrong.
So we're going to do our we're going to do a whip crack away then.
Yeah, let's.
Yes, I think that'll be that's some of it. A little bit, isn't it?
Let's do it.
What have we got in that's fresh and new and not related in any way to what we've just put ourselves through?
Right. Well, someone called AA Seeley has sent in. Don't even know what you call this.
I think read the email. That'll be useful because I think she explains it in the. In the email.
Yeah, how does she describe it?
Bonjour. That's not pretentious, is it?
Bonjour.
Sorry, you just sounded... Who puts that at the start of an email? My name is Avril Ambassy... Oh, she might actually be French. Sorry. My name is Avril Ambassy, pen name A.A. Seeley. Please don't read out my full name. Oops. Obviously, despite as yet not being published at all, I'm not a failing writer. Okay. So I don't really listen to your podcast. This is nice.
Oh, that's...
But an acquaintance told me I should send him a writing for your whip feature that you do. Well, that's where we are.
This is the best one we've had in.
Oh, it's an interesting one. It's a good one.
Yeah. I don't really... Oh, I like this. Have you read this email? I don't really need a lot of feedback, so you don't need to do a lot of that. I mean, all right. That's literally the point of the... What? I mainly write in the railway romance genre. Which is apparently romance tales that involve steam trains to varying extents.
Sounds nice.
This is my first foray into Norse god space romanticism.
This
is an overcrowded genre, but as you'll see, my output is such that I can easily take on different markets without much issue. That's unpublished, but full of confidence. That's good. She goes on saying she wants to be paid for... Well, we can...
Yeah, she really hasn't listened, has she?
No, she's not before. Yeah, so this is her first foray into a brand new genre, which is quite exciting.
Yeah.
We'll certainly
sexy,
get behind that. That's
sexy
good.
Viking, yeah. Sounds like. So I'm up for that.
Well, why don't you read it to us then, Davey?
Well, then maybe I will. Hammer and Thongs by A.A. Seeley. Space was black. The colour of night with your eyes shut tight. And right now, the eyes of the demigoddess Helga Ragnarsdottir were shut tighter than they'd ever been before. She was panting like the great wolf Garm as he guarded the very gates of hell. Her back arched above the bed like the entrance to the halls of Valhalla, her moans louder than the loud subwarp engines of the space cruiser Gokstad 7 as it rattled through the inky black, empty blackness of deep space. The journey had begun as a quest to find the ancient kingdom of Asgard, but as Helga writhed alone on the silken sheets in her luxurious boudin noir, she realized it had descended into a quest for pure, naked, raw, untamed, undiluted, unadulterated pleasure. Thor knows it wasn't supposed to be this way. Helga was a warrioress, a princess born in the imperial palace of New Uppsala, daughter of King Ragnar the Brave and Queen Frida the Rampant. This mission was her destiny, and it was also what she was born to do. From birth, it had been foretold she would be the chosen one, chosen to lead the true children of Odin back to their ancient ancestral home amongst the shining stars. Her childhood had been one of sacrifice. Whilst the other boys and girls had played in the courtyard of Castle Aarhus, enjoying the peace and plenty that flowed through and embraced the kingdom like a cosy and prosperous lamb's wool scarf, following her father's victory in the Second War of the Violets, Helga would spend every hour the gods sent training hard. The sword, the shield, the bow, the Viking nunchucks, these were her only friends. The taste of her own blood, shed in battle, her only comfort. Her scars, bulging muscles, and beautiful, tired body, all she had to show for her tireless efforts. As a teenager, she'd watched her peers court and marry and bear children to continue their family lines, but she must remain pure. only a virgin of the faith, a woman untouched by the hands of man, could hope to follow the righteous path, to navigate the treacherous curves of the Bifrost as it slithered through the galaxy portals. And thus came the day when, shining with virtue, unknowing of the pleasures of the flesh, with 1,000 rippling warriors at her back, she uttered the sacred vows before the great and good of the kingdom, swearing, with the gods as her witness, that she would lead her people once more unto the glorious gates of Asgard, or, if things went bad, possibly die trying, or worse. It was only as she stood on the deck of Gokstad 7 and firmly gripped the captain's joystick for the first time that she realized she made a terrible mistake and was likely to soon have a terrible mess on her hands. Fullskard Aprosson was wiping down the pumps in the engine room when he felt the tremors begin. He was a humble man, his family status far too low to ever be afforded the position of warrior. Orphaned in the final days of the Great Wars, he had been sold to the Engineers Guild by his uncle for little more than a stale loaf of bread and a lump of hard, unyielding cheese. Like his uncle's heart. Not cheesy, but stale and unyielding. Long had he watched the movements of the princess, long and hard. Only once had he gotten close enough to take in the very heady musk of her scent, on the day she'd been ushered through the bowels of the ship for a purely symbolic inspection, and yet it intoxicated him still. Her aroma lingering in the firm and fulsome mass of his convoluted beard. The other slaves had mocked him when he'd been given the position of pump wiperer, and yet he saw it as if a gift from the gods. These pumps that carried the very lifeblood of the vessel, the strange thixotropic liquid thick with thorsmen that powered the warp engines, were not just vital to this mission, they were vital to his desires. Though he was responsible daily for wiping troublesome condensate from their entire length, from stem to stern, it was here in midship that he most often lingered. For right above where he now stood, his chest rippling and heaving, dripping with perspiration, was the Lady Helga's private chamber. No man had ever entered her inner sanctum, nor been permitted to see what lay beneath her golden armour. But as Fullskard stood with eyes closed, his hands gripping the pump shaft, he could hear each movement, each sharp intake of breath. And he imagined. Oh yes, he imagined. And as the tremors grew, he imagined how it would feel to thrust open her doors, to stride into her chamber and wrest the shining armour from her glistening torso to reveal her orbulous bosoms. His whole body shook like a lightly electrocuted person with anticipation. And as it shook, he slowly realised it was not just him that was shaking. That the tremors were not just coming from above, that the screams he could hear were not just those of his lady's pleasure. The screams were of pain. The tremors were the spasms of the ship as it buckled under torpedo blasts. They were under attack. They had found him. At last.
Yeah, there you go. What did you guys...
Don't laugh, right, but I thought that this was actually really clever, this piece.
Hey?
And I can see why AA might have a certain, swagger about her work.
I mean, she's got something. We can definitely say she's got something.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Really?
It puts you right in there. Do you know what I mean? You're straight in there.
I suppose, yeah, I did get a feeling.
Into the story. There's no messing about, is there?
I felt like I was on that ship.
Yeah, in medias res.
For sure, yeah.
I like, here's a thing from the first paragraph that I spotted. I love that repetition of black, which becomes almost like a sort of sexy incantation.
A motif for it, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't look deep. I wondered
if she was kind of... Because she keeps repeating, and I was wondering if that, she was sort of drawing a contrast between the exterior of the spaceship, i.e., you know, space itself, and the warm, deep interior of the demigoddess. Or, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's
Oh, you mean so like the entire, the, so there's the spaceship itself was like a metaphor for
her inner
deep
sanctum.
Internals.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I didn't
just something.
I didn't get that.
I think maybe.
But it was raw. It was pretty raunchy without being overtly explicit, wasn't it?
There were moments,
and there was some wonderful symbolism.
Yeah, there were moments when it reached like the edge of erotica, and then
it pulled climaxes,
back.
Didn't it?
Well, it almost did, but then it was like edging in some way. It sort of got nearly there, but then pulled back just enough. Mm. So you could hold on.
And isn't that what you want when you're reading this kind of thing? You want to be taken right up to the edge.
I suppose, otherwise you're never going to get to the end of the story, are you? If it just,
true.
If it's like in the first couple of paragraphs, why read
what?
On?
Sorry,
if it's like straight away, you never get to the end. And I've got to say that my favourite bit was the very last few words of the chapter. I was thinking,
I love that as well.
Yeah, like
what a way to make you want to read on.
Mm, they've found him at last.
So, what do you think in that? Do you think he's actually one of the chosen ones as well? He's got
he's an orphan, isn't he?
Is this just a rip off sort of Star Wars? Then is that what we're saying? Is he going to end up?
Hey,
being
isn't everything?
I suppose
princess
it is
isn't
brother.
Everything,
yeah,
Tom?
Or sort and of then, Games of Throne-y. Yeah.
Oh, she's not. Oh no, they
thing.
They're not going to be brother and sister. Yeah. That's going to be awkward, isn't it?
I think that's very awkward.
I think so. But I get the feeling that AA Seeley won't pull back from that.
No.
That's going to be the stopping point that it was for George Lucas.
Censorship point.
No.
But some of the symbolism, the navigating the treacherous curves of the Bifrost as it slithered through the galaxy portals. Oh, come on.
Yes.
Or he was responsible daily for wiping troublesome condensate from their entire length from stem to stem. And I felt like that's obviously a symbolic reference to his need for spiritual cleansing, isn't it? You know, the condensation being like a foggy
that's
veil.
One of them. I think that's
not
one of them
how I read it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go
It's about
with John's,
his metaphysical journey, isn't it?
That, it is, yeah.
Very
yeah.
clever, very
yeah.
clever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
I'm not sure I enjoyed it on the same level as you, John. I definitely
enjoyed
it.
Well, I don't think a lot of people do, Dave. I don't think a lot of people do.
That's true.
But that's just
I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you get into proper literature, that it does give different people different things.
Yeah, on different layers.
Yeah, when something's written to such a deep level, then maybe, you know what I mean?
You can dig all sorts.
There's a lot of confidence in. I like the confidence in the writing.
Oh, there is a lot.
That is true.
Yeah,
that is
just.
True.
It's kind of like I'm going to write this. I don't care whether you think it's wrong or.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't have a list of five adjectives in a row or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care.
It's cocky, isn't it? It's as cocky as the email that she sent it with.
Which
is great.
It kind of it does fit actually when you say that.
Do you know what you need? That you need confidence. If you don't believe that what you're writing is any good, why the hell is anyone else going to enjoy it? Do you know what I mean?
No, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Put it out there,
and boy, did she!
She certainly did. But I did. Do you know what? I did. I liked the way it sort of, you know, it kind of. There was, I mean, there was enough to sort of get you thinking. I want to know where this goes, not just in a sort of sexy way, but you know, in terms of like, there's.
Well, we want that as well, obviously. But
you need a bit of that if it's going to be like an erotic type thing. But this felt like the start of an opus. In some ways, you know, there was an epic element to it, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. Like the start of a sort of 12-part series, 12 volumes, in a massive series.
Can I ask you boys a question, though? Can I ask you boys a question? So we've read this. If it turned out, and I'm not saying this is the case, I don't think it is. If it turned out that this, in fact, was a revenge piece written by Flora Opil to make us look stupid...
And she sent it in under a pseudonym.
Yeah.
This is way better. This is way better than anything that old hag's pulled out for years, isn't it?
Yeah.
Come on.
Steady on.
You're probably right, mate. You're probably right.
Actually, it's not dissimilar to some of her writing, to be fair.
No, that's what made me think. Maybe. Because some of her, the books in the middle of her works are a bit kind of...
I think that's still a stretch.
But anyway, Avril. Avril Amber Seeley, thank you for sending that in. That's interesting, I would say.
Yeah, And the check is absolutely not in the post.
Yeah, what's that about? Yeah.
Nor will it ever be.
Nor will it ever be. Don't even have a checkbook.
It's all right. A last line of an email after she's asked for payment is, I'm somewhat relying on your integrity and honesty with regards to that. As mentioned previously, I will most likely not be listening to the podcast. Kindest regards.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. All right.
Yeah. Happy days.
Actually, though, let's think about this. Mm. She said that an acquaintance, she didn't say friend, but an acquaintance told her that she should be sending it in. That means that somebody...
Someone listening right now.
...has actually shared what we've asked them to share. Yeah. That's good. Word of mouth.
That is good.
It is spreading.
Yeah.
This is secondhand
Brilliant.
Evidence.
Is there a point where we should say, be picky about who you share it with? Or are we just happy for any all comers?
Anything.
We don't care.
Anything. Anyone. Yeah, we don't. We're not picky, are we?
Right, well...
Is that all we've got time for? Is that what you're going to say, Tom?
I think that probably is all we've got time for.
I think it might be. I think that's a good place to shut things down.
That's been a strange old do, that.
An interesting episode.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, all that remains to say is, just like the acquaintance of Avril, whatever her name was, if you enjoyed the show, please share it with your friends and give us a review. All the usual stuff, subscribe, what people say, and come back next week.
Yeah, we've got an episode next week, a little in-between the episode, so we will see you there.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Au revoir for Avril.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?